In the 11th chapter of Sefer Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu Hanavi describes at length what are the unique or the singular attributes within the personality of the individual who's going to be Mashiach. What are the characteristics of the Mashiach? After he goes through an entire list of what different attributes that particular person has to have in order that he should be potentially Mashiach, he sums it up and he says, "The arichei beyiras Hashem, v'loy lemare einov yishpoit, v'loy lemishma oznov yechiach." That he's going to be an individual who's not going to judge according to the way in which he perceives things, the way in which he sees things. He's not going to be an individual who is going to judge on the basis of what he hears, but he's going to be an individual, and this is the way that the Mefarshim explained the Pasuk, he's going to be an individual who'll be able to smell what the right thing is at a given point in time. In other words, even that unique, singular individual who has all the different attributes that are the prerequisites of being Mashiach can't trust his judgment in terms of what he sees, because human nature is that we see what we want to see. We can't judge according to what he hears, because human nature is such that one hears what one wants to hear and one doesn't hear what one doesn't want to hear. But he'll have this chush areach, he'll have this sensitivity of being able to smell out what the truth is. We find in Sefer Shmuel that after Ribbono Shel Olam says that Shaul HaMelech messed up when he mistakenly, under pressure from the public and for a variety of other reasons, didn't do what the Ribbono Shel Olam told him to do in reference to killing the Amalekim, and he allowed some of the Amalekim to survive, that the response of the Ribbono Shel Olam was that you lose your melucha, that the royalty leaves you, that you won't be able to continue with a dynasty of kings. There won't be a lineage of kings from you. It's going to move over to somebody else. And Shmuel HaNavi gets a nevuah, and the Ribbono Shel Olam instructs him in this nevuah that a new king has been chosen by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and Shaul HaMelech has to go and he has to anoint this new king as king. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, it's in the first perek of Sefer Shmuel, in perek Tes Zayin of Sefer Shmuel, of Shmuel Aleph. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to Shmuel HaNavi, there's a guy called Yishai, and this Yishai has a number of sons, and I want you to go to the house of Yishai, and you will appoint one of his sons as king in place of Shaul HaMelech. However, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't tell him which son. He doesn't specify which one of the many sons of Yishai is going to be the Melech. He just says that you should go to the house of Yishai and you will appoint one of the sons. And the story unfolds as it appears there, that after Shmuel HaNavi gets this nevuah of Eshlachecha el Yishai Beis HaLachmi, that I'm sending you to Yishai Beis HaLachmi, Ki ra'isi bebonov li melech, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I've chosen, I've seen one of his children that they are suitable to be the melech. He gets there, and the first person he meets as he gets to the house of Yishai is one of the sons of Yishai. And this son of Yishai, his name was Eliyov. And he's the first person that Shmuel HaNavi meets when he gets there. And Shmuel HaNavi looks at him, and Shmuel HaNavi says, Ach neged Hashem Mishichai. It's obvious to me that this is the son that the Ribbono Shel Olam chose, that I should anoint him, that he should be the successor to Shaul HaMelech. And the Radak says, why was he so convinced that this son was the son that the Ribbono Shel Olam had in mind? Because he was tall, he was handsome, he was very, very impressive, he was very charismatic, and he had the exact external stature and imposing personality that Shaul HaMelech had, which seemingly is part and parcel of royalty. It's part and parcel of being a king, is you have to have also this exterior manner, you have to have this exterior appearance, you have to have this presence. And therefore, he was convinced that this is the son that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants him to be, to anoint as the king. And he gets ready to make him into the king, to anoint him as the king. And as he's about to do it, he gets a further nevuah. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says it to him in this nevuah, Vayema Hashem el Shmuel, al tabet el mar'ehu, v'al gvoi keimosai. Don't be impressed by the external appearance of this particular son of Yishai, ki ma'astihu, because he's not the guy. He's mos to me. He's a balavera. Ki loy ashe yire ha'odom. The way I see things is not the way that human beings see things, says Ribbono Shel Olam. Ki ha'odom yire le'inayim. Because people see things superficially. Human beings see things superficially. The Hashem yire le'levov. And I see what goes on inside people. Therefore, you see the external personality of this particular son of Yishai, and therefore you're assuming that this is the person that should be king because he looks it. He looks the part. As far as you can see on a superficial level, he's got everything going for him that he should be the king. But I know who he really is, says Ribbono Shel Olam. And if you know who he really is, then he's not suitable to be the king. When you think about it, it's pretty amazing. You're talking here about a novel. You're not talking about some guy in the street. You're talking about a novel. You're talking about a guy who's got an open communication line, direct, with Ribbono Shel Olam. And even so, he can make a mistake in the way in which he sees something and the way in which he perceives something. And seemingly, so too, it would have been possible that Shmuel HaNavi would have heard this son of David of Yishai saying something, and he would have been so impressed with what he heard him saying that he would have said, oh, he's the guy who has to be the Melech. And yet the Ribbono Shel Olam comes along, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, you don't hear what I hear. I hear differently than you, because you hear only on a superficial level, and I hear on a much deeper level. Therefore, says Yishayahu HaNavi, seeing, hearing, that's not enough even by the Mashiach, that should qualify him that he should be the Mashiach. If he hasn't got this chush harayach, if he hasn't got this ability, if he hasn't got as part and parcel of his personality the ability to smell the truth, to sense the truth, then he can't be Mashiach. And the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim talks at length about the topic of Mashiach and what's going to happen when Mashiach comes, etc., etc., etc. And there's a very interesting comment there of the Ravid. And the Ravid says, it's in the 11th Perek of Hilchos Melachim, that Bar Kochba, Bar Koziva, who led the revolt against the Romans, was Machriz. He announced that he's Mashiach. Va'oma, it's based on a Chazal, this Ravid. And he said, Anu Malka Mashiach, I'm the Mashiach. Says the Ravid, Bodku. They said, okay, you think you're Mashiach? No problem. We'll give you the litmus test as to whether you're Mashiach or you're not Mashiach. Let's see if you can paskin by smelling. Let's see if you know whether it's kosher or whether it's treif, whether it's tomeh or whether it's tahir with the chush harayach. If you can do that, then you're Mashiach. If you can't do that, you're not. Chazal say they tested it, they tested him, and he didn't pass the test, and they decided he's Mashiach Sheker, and they killed him. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says the Romans killed him. Right. Migdalai says there, why does the Rambam disagree? Because the Rambam says if a guy gets up and says he's Mashiach, you don't kill him. You send him to a psychiatrist. Therefore, it's obviously that the Jews didn't kill him because there was no reason to kill him. Therefore, the Romans must have killed him. Of Al Kaponim, the Rav is talking here, the Rav is telling us Halacha Lemaisa, that the way in which you baidik, and based on Chazal, but the way in which you baidik Mashiach is, as the Navi Yishayahu says, look at this, chush harayach. Okay, so that's Mashiach. And then come Chazal, and Chazal drop this one level. And Chazal say, it's a Gemara in Nida, and Daf Nun on the base, and Chazal say that Ulo gave the name to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, Mora da'ara di Yisrael, the master of Eretz Yisrael, crowned him as the Gedol HaDor. Says the Gemara, why? What was unique about Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas that nobody else had around? The Ulo determined he's the Gedol HaDor. Says the Gemara, Shehaya don al pi reyach. He had the ability to paskin because he could smell whether something was kosher or something was treif, whether something was tomei or something was tahir. Obviously not on the highest level, because if it would have been on the highest level he would have been Mashiach. But obviously there's a lower level. There's a lower level of being able to be meiriach the emes, which Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas had, which created the reason why Ulla held that he must be unique in the generation, because he was the only individual who had this possibility, or had this ability, had this capacity to be able to be Meiriach the Emes. In other words, there is the concept of a chush harayach. The individual who has it to its nth degree, to the maximum, that's only Mashiach. But there's a level of harochas ha'emes, of being able to smell the truth, which gets you to a daga of Mora de'ara de Yisrael. I once heard from Chaim Shmulevitz, and he said the following. He said, what's the pshat? What's the explanation? Why is it that Mashiach, Moreh Darad Yisrael, even if you're going to say it's different dargas, even if you're going to say it's different madrigas, but why is it that they were Zaycha to this Chush HaReach and the other people weren't Zaycha to it? In other words, how did they get this Chush HaReach? Where did it come from? So he said it came from one thing. It came from the fact that these were people who had responsibilities. In other words, the individual who has all the milas that Yeshayahu HaNovi lists as being the milas of the individual who's going to be Mashiach. Because he has these milas, he's going to be Mashiach. What does that mean, he's going to be Mashiach? That means he's going to lead Klal Yisrael. He's going to bear responsibility for Klal Yisrael. Somebody who has to take responsibility gets a matnas shemayim, somebody who's royu to bear responsibility, he gets a matonim in the shemayim of this chush hareach. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas was an olam gadol. Uda said he has everything going for him to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. But to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, that's nachrayus, it's responsibility. In order to be able to function with that responsibility, so the Ribbono Shel Olam has to give him a chush hareach. Because all the other chushim, all the other senses that we have, are not reliable. Because when you see something, you can see it superficially. When you hear something, you can hear it superficially. When you understand something, you can understand it superficially on an intellectual level. And therefore you're liable to make a mistake. And if you bear responsibility, you can't afford to make mistakes. If somebody's responsible for Klal Yisrael, and he's going to make decisions which are going to affect the entirety of Klal Yisrael, we can't afford the Hecha Timsa that there should be a possibility that you should be able to make a mistake. The Gemara says, in Eruvin, on Daf Kuf Amud Beis, Omer Rabbi Yechanan said, had Torah not been given, we would have been able to learn certain concepts from nature. Says the Gemara, the Rabbi Yechanan said, we would have learnt sneers from a cat. We would have learnt gezel from an ant. And we would have learnt being careful not to be over on Yisurei Aroyos from a Yoina. And we would have learned the concept of Derech Eretz, says Rabbi Yochanan, from a chicken. Chazal bring, not there on the Gemara, but Chazal in the Medrash Rabbah, bring the following story. Omer Rav Shimon ben Chalafta, that Rav Shimon ben Chalafta said, Meister, there was a story. In other words, this is something which happened, we saw it happening. Maisa ben Amolot, there was a story with an ant. Namolachas, there was one ant. What do ants do? They collect food, they gather food. This ant was schlepping kernels of wheat. It was carrying this kernel of wheat, this chitoachas, and it dropped it. But he didn't realize he dropped it. So an ant being an ant, he keeps going. So he kept on walking, or whatever ants do. Rabbi Kovitz, what do ants do? They walk. He kept moving. He kept moving. And he left behind the chito. Says Rav Shimon ben Chalafta, you know what I saw? I saw hundreds of ants that were walking behind this ant, and every single one of these ants went up to this chito, smelt it, and then moved away from it. Says Rabbi Shimon ben Chalachta, V'lo ha'isa achas mehen neiteles oisa. Until Aisa Sheha Aisa Shelo. The ant dropped it, realized that it dropped it, turned around, went back, and picked it up again. Says Rav Shimon Chalafta, that's what the Pasuk in Mishlei says. That's what Shlomo HaMelech says. There were no judges around. There were no police around. There was nobody telling them, don't touch that, it's not yours. They smelt that it wasn't theirs and they kept away from it. That's what the Pasuk in Mishlei says in Perek Vav, Asha ein lei katzin shaita umosho. You don't need police. You don't need a legal system. You can smell when it's not yours. Say Chazal. Lulei shenit natera. And even acha shenit natera. Person has to understand and person has to learn from an ant. An ant! What's the brain capacity of an ant? How big is the ant altogether? So how big can his brain be? If he has one. And yet the ant, who's probably the lowest of the lowest in terms of the Berea, has a chush areach. It's not a chush areach to the degree that Mashiach has it. It's not a chush areach to the degree that the Aram Mora, the Aram Yisrael has. But there is a chush areach there. A chush areach insofar as to know whether it's mine or it's not mine. Whether it's my object or it's not my object. Why? Because the entire focus of the life of the ant is one thing and one thing only. Gathering together enough food that his family can survive. Therefore he's achroi. Therefore he's responsible for his family. If he's responsible for his family in the area of food, he has a chush areach in the area of food. Rav Dessler, and I've mentioned this many times beforehand, Rav Dessler in Chedek Aleph of Michta Merio poses the time-old philosophical psychological question. And that is, how can the individual ever come to an objective decision about anything which he has a doubt about? Rav Dessler starts off with a premise, with a very basic premise, and says that Ein machshava b'li hisanyinus. There is no such thing as a person thinking about a topic that he's totally disinterested in. Somebody who's very interested in a certain topic, his mind's involved in that topic. Somebody who's not interested in that topic whatsoever, his mind never thinks at all ever about that topic. He brings an example of stamp collecting. He says there are people who wrote huge books about stamp collecting. He says, take your average guy, if he walks into a bookstore, he walks into a library, he takes a book on stamp collecting. It's the last thing in his mind, why? He's totally disinterested in stamp collecting. Stamp collecting is meaningless to him. Right? Nobody thinks or gets involved in something which is totally disinteresting for him. There are people who open up a newspaper. If they are intelligent people, they read the editorial. If they are business people, they usually read the ad columns. If they're Schwarzers, they look at the pictures on the sports page. Person opens up a newspaper, he looks at what interests him, what doesn't interest him, he doesn't look at. If sports don't interest him, he doesn't even open up the sport pages. He garbages it straight away. Says Rav Dessler, if that's the case, that a person only thinks about that which he's interested in and doesn't think about that which he's not interested in, then every time a person is faced with a problem, what does a problem mean? A problem means two sides. Should I? Shouldn't I? But every person deep down inside him has a rot. Every person deep down inside him has one side of the problem which he's more native to. He wants
to do. Maybe it's not right to do, therefore I won't do. But what do I want to do? To do. See, if that's the case, then his mind only thinks about that one side of the problem. He will definitely, without any doubt whatsoever, says Rav Dessler, if that's the case, end up with the decision to do. And as I always give the example that he gives, he says it's the famous Shaila, are you allowed to play chess on Shabbos? Big machlokes about it, whether you're allowed to play chess on Shabbos or not. Right? Big machlokes b'chlal, whether you're allowed to play games on Shabbos. Right? So, something which you ignoramuses should know. It's a big machlokes as to whether you're allowed to play games on Shabbos. Very big machlokes. In fact, I'm not quite sure who's making about playing any game which has to do with business, with commerce. Right? Find me somebody who's matter it. And about chess, there's also a shaila whether you're allowed to do it on Shabbos for those who are interested in Shmiras Shabbos. We're not talking about the guys who believe in the Shabbos, even in the dorms. But the guys who are interested in Shmiras Shabbos. Says Rav Dessler, ask a guy, are you allowed to play chess on Shabbos, and bring me the sources. If he's an avid chess player, you're guaranteed he'll bring you every single posek who is matarit. If he couldn't care less about chess, you're guaranteed he'll bring you every single posek who says it's awesome. Why? Because ein machshava b'li hisanyinus. A person's mind works in the direction what he's interested in. If so, says Rav Dessler, how can a person ever come to an objective decision about anything in his life? Any decision that he will make in his life will be a totally subjective decision, because whatever it is, his preconceived intent on that particular problem, whether it's for good reasons or bad reasons, is irrelevant. Whatever he wants to do on that problem, that's the decision he's going to come to at the end of the day. He will pontificate about it for days, but at the end of the day he'll come to decide to do what he wants to do. So how can we ever make decisions? So he has a lengthy explanation of this. How a person can work on himself in order to be able to reach a degree of objectivity. But after he goes through this whole lengthy exposition of what a person can do in order to educate himself to be objective, he says at the end of the day that's all well and good. But how does he make decisions until he gets there? That means until he manages to achieve this, all the decisions that he's making are going to be wrong decisions. To which he says the following. He says, Hatshuva, the answer is, even though we are subjective, ein hanegio machase legamre eso emes. Subjectivity doesn't cover up the truth entirely. Ki gam achrei asher yifate hayeter es ha'odom. Because even after the Yetzer Hara manages to persuade a person, leima to say, shegam derech hasheker emes hi, even after the Yetzer Hara manages to convince a person that the derech hasheker is emes, Mikol Mokim, nevertheless, Yedeahu Ba'atzmoy, deep down inside him, he really knows Shederech HaEmes Amitis Yaisa, what the truth is. Deep down, every single person inside him knows what the truth is. V'zeh Michazdei Abayre Baruchu, and this is one of the Chasodim of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Sheleinot Tan Rishus LeYetzer. He never gave permission to the Yetzer Hara to cover up the truth completely. There doesn't exist a person who deep down inside him doesn't know what the truth is. Why? Because this is the chesed that the Ribbono Shel Olam did with us. But on our level, on our very basic level, every single individual has a chush hareach of the emes. Every single individual, every single Jew, has an instinctive smell of the truth. And the Rambam uses this concept halacha lemaisa. The halacha is that a get can only be given beratzen. That when a husband gives a get, he has to want to give a get. You can't coerce him. You can't force him to give a get. Yet the Gemara says, Makin Aisayachi Meretzani. If a husband doesn't want to give a get, beat him up until he says, I'm willing to give the get. Says the Rambam, if so, he's giving the get because he's being beaten up. No, he's got giving the get because he wants to give the get. So how does it stem? How does it fit together with the concept that you can't give a get? Ala Meretzaino. Says the Rambam, Mi shetokfa yitzrei hora. The Rambam in Hilchos Geirushin. Perek Beis. Halacha Chof. Halacha Lamaisa. Mi shetokfa yitzrei hora levatel mitzvoi la'aseis aveira. Somebody who's got a yetzer hora, and therefore the yetzer hora tells him, don't do a mitzvah, do an aveira. And he doesn't do the mitzvah, or he does the aveira. So then Beis Din beat him up. Vahuka ad she'osa dovu shechayev la'aseisei. I'm not putting on tefillin today. So the Beis Din beat him up. Kaifin al mitzvah asei. They beat him up until he says, I'll put tefillin on today. Just leave me one arm not broken, and I'll put tefillin on today. Says the Rambam, Ein ze onus. That's not called forced. Why? Because who onus atzmoi b'day Torah? Because he forced himself. He was ma'anis himself to do the Aveira. And therefore all that Bezdin are doing are taking away that which he's forcing himself to do. Why, says the Rambam? Because every single Jew writes Eliyahs me Israel and writes who last is kolam mitzvahs and is rachek min Aveiras. Every Jew wants to do mitzvahs and every Jew doesn't want to do Aveiras. The Yitzra, who should take for it, but it's the Yitzhara, which is forcing him to do the Aveiras and not to do the mitzvahs. Therefore, you hit him until it destroys the desire that the Yitzhara gave him, and he's back to his natural disposition. His natural disposition is that he wants to do mitzvahs. What his natural disposition is that he wants to do mitzvahs? Why should his natural disposition be he wants to do mitzvahs? Because the Rambam held halacha lemaisa that this is michas de abayra, that deep down inside him, every single Jew knows what's right and what's wrong. It's just he happens to have a problem. His problem is the Yetzer Hara. But he knows the emes. Why does every single Jew have a chush areach? Because the Bein Yishlam didn't give a person responsibility without giving him chush areach. Mashiach gets chush areach because he's responsible for Klal Yisrael. Moreh De'Arad Yisrael gets Chush HaReach because he's responsible for Eretz Yisrael. The Jew gets Chush HaReach because he's responsible for himself. He has Achrayas over himself. He has responsibility over himself, so the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him this Chush HaReach. On the other hand, we see clearly that it doesn't work. Because even though the Chush HaReach exists, it, somehow it's disconnected from the way in which we act. One of the very first parshiyos in the Torah is the parsha of Cain and Hevel. Cain kills Hevel. And after Cain kills Hevel, the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to Cain and he says to Cain, where's your brother? And Cain answers him back and he says, Lo yodaiti. I don't know. Hashema ochi anochi. Do I have to look after my brother 24 hours a day that I have to know where my brother is? God speaks to Cain. But God has never spoken to any one of us here. And if anybody thinks here that God spoke to him, please tell Rabbi Lopin immediately and get a prescription. And see a good psychiatrist. God only speaks to Nevi'im. God doesn't speak to normal people. God speaks to Nevi'im. So if God spoke to Cain, Cain was a Novi. And to be a Novi, you have to have a tremendous amount of milest. You have to be a very unique, special person. So what does this Navi Cain think? That he's going to fool God? He just killed his brother, and God says to him, where's your brother? I don't know.
Well, I don't know where my brother is, but I don't know where my brother is.
So what do you think? You know, he's going to buy it, the auction? And who are you trying to fool here? You're trying to fool God?
Chazal interpret this pasuk in a fascinating way. Chazal say, Lo yadaitim doesn't mean I don't know. Chazal say that Lo yadaitim means nothing to do with me. In other words, Cain turned around to Ribbono Shel Olam and said to Ribbono Shel Olam, you're asking me where Hevel is. In other words, you're asking me, why did I kill Hevel? The answer is, nothing to do with me. What do you mean, nothing to do with me? You killed him. What's that thing to do with me?
Says the Medrash Tanchuma the following. Listen carefully. The Medrash Tanchuma says the following.
The Medrash Tanchuma says, the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, where is your brother Hevel? You killed him. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him. You killed him. To which Cain turns around to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, Ani aragti, I say? I killed him?
So the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you killed him.
Says Cain back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I didn't kill him, you killed him.
Says the Ribbono Shel Olam back to Cain, I killed him? What are you talking about?
Says Cain, yes, you killed him. Barasa bi Yetzirah. You created in me the Yetzirah. If you wouldn't have created me in the Yetzirah, then I would never have killed him. Ata Shemeres Hakol, you run the entire Bria. This is what Cain says to Ribbono Shel Olam. You're in control of everything. Nothing happens in this world without you. V'li einachta yisrael ha'arek. Hashema Ochi. Who should have protected my brother? Who should have ensured that he doesn't get killed? Anoichi. That one who said Anoichi Hashem Rekecho. It's nothing to do with me. It's your fault. And then Cain carries on, says the Medrash Tanchum, and says to Ribbono Shel Olam, in fact, you're doubly to blame. So Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm doubly to blame. So Cain says, yeah. First of all, he gave me a Yetzirah. Second of all, you messed up. So you murdered him. So Ribbono Shel Olam says back to Cain, I murdered him? How did I murder him? Says Cain, because if you would have accepted my korban, I wouldn't have had a reason to kill him. The only reason why I killed him was because you accepted his korban, you didn't accept my korban. So who's to blame, you or me? It's unbelievable. This guy's a classic Lev Arya guy. He doesn't do anything. He's never to blame for anything at all. He's fine. It's always the Ribbono Shel Olam to blame. I was born with ADD, I was born with ADJ, I was born with BGG, I was born, not with BJJ, I was born with every single illness, psychological problem under the world. I have an overprotective mother, I have an underprotective mother. I don't have a mother. I should have had a mother. If I would have had a mother, it would have been different. I have an abusive father. I don't have an abusive enough father. I don't know who my father is. If I would know who my father is, then I wouldn't be where I am. So you're to blame. What are we doing when we argue these things? What are we doing when somebody comes to us and says to us, why did you do that? And you say, it's not my fault. Removing responsibility. That's basically what we're doing. It's not my responsibility. I'm not responsible for myself because I don't control myself. You're the one who controls me. And if you think about it, that is the whole working system of the Yetzer Hara in today's day and age. Every tkufa has its Yetzer Hara. There was a point in time where people stopped doing mitzvahs for intellectual reasons. There was a time when people still had brains and they still read things and you had to read and then you had to write and they were educated. And intellectually they had problems. They had philosophical problems, they had scholarly problems, call it what you like. Today nobody knows how to read, nobody knows how to write, nobody knows how to do anything except for press buttons. So therefore that doesn't exist anymore. So the Yetzer Hara is out of business. So he comes up with a new idea. Create an entire generation of people who spend their entire lives removing the responsibility from themselves. I have a genetic characteristic. If you would have known my grandfather, you'd understand why I'm behaving the way I'm behaving. All of a sudden, he's to blame. Right? You're a Mechalos Shabbos, Eichel, Neil, Vedas, and Trafus. And the poor guy, lying under his stone, he's to blame. He did it. Had nothing to do with you. Not willing to take a chayas. Not willing to take responsibility. In this week's parasha, we find a story. Moshe Rabbeinu is walking, and Moshe Rabbeinu sees a bush, and the bush is burning, and the burning bush is not getting consumed, right? We all know the story. They taught it to us in kindergarten. The Pasuk says that when very beginning of this week's parasha. Vayomas Yosef v'chol echo v'chol hador hahu. That Yosef and his brothers all died. And then what happens? And then Golas Mitzrayim starts. The Arachayim HaKadosh writes, what is the point of the Pasuk telling us that Yosef and all his brothers died? What's the message here that Yosef and all his brothers died? Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, that the Pasuk is coming to tell us that Kol Zman, one of the brothers, was alive, the Egyptians were Mechabed, Klal Yisrael. Kol Zman, one of the brothers, was alive, Jews had respect from the Egyptians. And the Egyptians didn't have a hava mina of being mishabed them. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh that when Yosef dies, Klal Yisrael become less important in the eyes of the Egyptians. When he was alive, they played a much greater role in the eyes of the Egyptians than they did after he died. When the brothers die, when all the brothers die, the Egyptians don't see the Jews as being any different than them. They see them as being shava b'shava. And then, within a very short period of time, they see them as being inferior. However, they still do not enslave Klal Yisrael. It's only v'chol hador hahu, when the entire generation of Yosef dies, then the shibud starts. The Egyptians were always Rishayim. The Egyptians, from day one, were Rishayim. But they couldn't be Mishabed Klal Yisrael, Kol Zman, the Klal Yisrael, in the eyes of the average Egyptian, was respected. Klal Yisrael, when they had self-respect, were respected by the Egyptians. But the minute that generation, B'chol HaDorahu, died out, and the next generation was a different type of generation, the next generation, the Egyptians weren't Mechabedim. Why weren't the Egyptians Mechabedim? Because they weren't Mechabed themselves. And somebody who has no self-respect is never respected by anybody else. That is what the Yetzer Hara does as well. The Yetzer Hara, when it tries to influence a person, The first thing it does is take away the person's self-respect. The Yetzer Hara knows that if you don't respect yourself, then it has a hold on you. Then he has the ability to do what he wants. If a person would realize that he has tremendous potential, if a person would realize that basically he can do whatever he wants, that basically he's in control of the situation, the Yetzer Hara would never be able to do anything to him. The only way in which the Yetzer Hara manages to succeed against in person is by hammering him the whole time that you haven't got the ability to do it. You haven't got the keichas nefesh. You haven't got the strength of character. You haven't got the intellectual capacity. You haven't got the ability. Right? That's what the Yetzer Hara does the whole time. It destroys the self-esteem of the person. And the minute the self-esteem and the self-respect of the person has been destroyed, then the Yetzer Hara controls us completely. So what's our response meant to be to that? Moshe Rabbeinu walks past the bush and he sees the bush burning and he sees that the bush isn't being consumed. What does he do? He says to himself, Asurana. Let me have a look at this. I'll see what this is all about. Says the Medrash Tanchuma that there are two opinions as to what happened here. Rabbi Yechanan Amar, Rabbi Yechanan said he'd walked past the bush and then realized that the bush wasn't getting consumed. And he walked back 3 steps. Asurana is 3 steps. Reish Lakish argues with him. Reish Lakish says he didn't walk back at all. He just turned his head back. That's all he did. How did Moshe become the Goyal Yisrael? Why was Moshe, or when was Moshe chosen by the Ribbono Shel Olam to be the Goyal? There. That's where he gets to Nevuah. That's where the Ribbono Shel Olam talks to him. That's where the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him that he's going to be the one that's going to have to be Metzi Kal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Why was he chosen? There was no way. If Moshe was going to think through what God was telling him, but Derech HaTeva, that he single-handedly was going to be able to gain the upper hand over the Egyptian Empire, which was the strongest nation in the world at the time. Chazal say that it was impossible for a prisoner ever to escape from Mitzrayim. It just couldn't happen. And the Ribbono Shel Olam turns around to Moshe Rabbeinu and says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you can do it single-handedly, you will do it. Why? Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, because I will give you the Siyata Dishmaya to do it. Enoch Anama, you couldn't do it on your own. There's no way you could do it on your own. But I guarantee you that I will do it for you. Why? What did Moshe Rabbeinu do which was so great that the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm picking you out from all the other people that there are here, and you're the one who's going to be Goyal Yisrael, because you're the one that I'm going to give the Siyata Dishmaya to. Nobody else, just you. Because of one reason, says the Medrash Tanchuma. Because he made one small effort. He turned his head to look at what's going on. He took 3 steps to look at what's going on. Says that Ribbono Shel Olam, that's all I want. I just want one small move. One small move in the right direction, and the rest, you don't worry about it. That's me. I'll do the rest for you. One of the great Bali Musa, of the early 20th century, Reb Leipzig Chassman, who was a Mashgiach, Chevron Yeshiva, said the following. There was a guy who was got lost in a forest. And he went for 4 days, and he couldn't find any food, and he couldn't find any water. and he was literally on the verge of death. And all of a sudden, as he's wandering around, he sees in front of him a huge building. And he says to himself, "Oh, thank God. Maybe there's some food here, maybe there's some water here." And he goes up to the building, and there's a window. And he looks through the window, and he can't believe what he sees. He sees a whole hall set out, and the tables are made from gold. And on it, masses and masses and masses of food and of drink. And he suddenly realizes not only can he get food and drink here to survive, but he can also become a millionaire. He'll just take a table with him. But as he's looking through the window and he's looking at all this, he's getting more thirsty and more hungry. He tries to open the window, he can't open the window. He tries to open the door, he can't open the door. And then he thinks to himself, "I'm so stupid." He didn't have koyach to schlep his bag with him. And he left his bag 20 minutes away. And in his bag he had a huge bunch of keys. And he says, "I'm sure one of these keys will fit the door here. And if I play with it, I'll be able to open the door." So mamish, with his last koyachas, he runs back to where his package is. And he takes out the bunch of keys. And he runs back to the hall. And he starts putting keys into the door, and they don't fit. The first one doesn't fit. The second one doesn't fit. And the door stays locked. When he gets to the last key, he puts the last key into the door, and he starts turning the lock, and he says, "Oh, that's it! I'm going to survive, I'm going to live!" And then it stops. And he thinks for a moment, and he suddenly realizes that all he has to do is he has to shave off the head of this key, just one millimeter, and it'll turn the lock. So he says to himself, "Great, I can live. I'll just shave off this 1 millimeter from the end of the key, and then the key will turn the lock completely." But he can't shave off the 1 millimeter from the key, because he hasn't got anything to shave it off with. He hasn't got an instrument to do it with. He looks around, there's a branch, there's a twig, there's a leaf, but there's nothing that he can shave off. So what happens? He dies. He dies outside this hall full of food and drink because he's missing a very, very small file, which if he had it, all he had to do was to take off 1 millimeter from that key and everything would be fine. So as Rebbe Chasman, we're in the same situation. We're dying out there. Why are we dying out there? Because there's the Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer Hara is hammering against us, and we haven't got the self-esteem and the self-respect that we need. And we always think it's too big for us. And we're always blaming everybody else for our problems. And all we need is to shave off 1 millimeter from the key, and we'll be able to get in there, into that hole, and we'll be able to survive. Says Rav Leib Chassman, the only difference between us and that guy is that we have the instrument. We have it. What is it? One small action. That's all. There has to be one thing. One is Gabrus Alayetza coming from us. One small act, a psia. One step. Turning your head. Everybody has one thing which is terribly, terribly, terribly difficult for him. Each guy's got his own thing when it comes to Shmiras HaMitzvahs. Each guy's got his own thing when it comes to Yerushalayim, which for him is very, very difficult. The Rebbe Yisrael is not asking for 30 days, 40 days, 50 days, $1,000, and all these narishkeit. He doesn't want that. He doesn't need that. That's not what he needs, the Rebbe Yisrael. He just needs one small move. Take one thing which is difficult and be miskaber on it. One thing. one Kriyat Shema with Kavana, one davening, sitting in a Bais Medrash from beginning to end, one Seder of a quarter of an hour where you're totally, totally focused on what you're learning. Says the Rebbeinu Shalom, that's all I want from you. You do that, I'll do the rest. And instead, we're even worse than the guy. Because we have the file in our pocket to shave the millimeter off the key. And we don't bother taking it out of our pocket, and we die outside the hall.